I am so happy to have a wonderful man, Brandon Wilson, who's a trekker, whose photographs and books just truly inspire my life. I just love seeing your posts on Facebook. Welcome, Brandon. Good connecting with you.
Yeah, nice to talk to you again, Cindy, and nice to connect again with all my old friends on Maui.
Well, you know, you're in France, and we're, I guess, about 12 hours difference from each other right now.
Yes.
So it's kind of one of those things where, okay, we're going to do Skype. So I'm trying Skype, and you've actually been teaching me how to use Skype now for the last half hour we've been trying to work this out. But, you know, I love all of your books. I've read every single one of your books. You are not only an intrepid traveler. You just truly are fearless in the treks you take. And I love the photographs and the stories that you write. So you have all these things going for you. But besides that, Brandon, I'd like to talk about the personal aspects of your motivation for trekking. First, give us the name of the four books that you have put out so far.
The first book was called Yak Butter Blues, Tibetan Trek of Faith. And it is about a trek that my wife and I took as the first Westerners to walk independently across Tibet on a walk for peace from Lhasa to Kathmandu, along with our Tibetan horse, Sadhu, who carried our bags. And that was quite an adventure, and it was a turning point for me. You know, it was a point in our lives where we had been traveling and working off a bucket list, you know, like everybody has. And we'd been traveling around the world on this sort of buffet of travel experiences and adventures. But this was totally different because what started out as just an adventure quickly became something much more meaningful as we decided to make this trek on a trail that had just, the border had just opened the day before we got in, Cindy.
Wow.
And had been closed for decades. And we went to Lhasa and saw the military occupation there and decided to take this trek for the Tibetan people with the hopes that the Chinese might relent and open up the border again for pilgrims to make their own personal pilgrimage then, from Lhasa to Kathmandu.
And of course, I thank you for that because I was able to go. I think I went after you. I went in 1997. And
yeah, that was a few years after.
So it worked because I was able to get in with Lama Tenzin, and it was a life-changing trip. And I think that there is still, in spite of all the difficulties with China, that there is still that power and the energy that exists in that country. And I have to say, and I want to comment on this, I'm glad you brought up the fact that you had an intent. I think any pilgrimage has more power, of course, if in the beginning you do set an intent, right, for your journey.
Absolutely. And for us, this was really the first pilgrimage journey. Since then, I've gone on to take probably a dozen pilgrimages in different parts of the world.
And they're all interesting. And again, your talent as a writer, you don't forget to put in all the details. And I think that's a sign of a good writer, but it's also makes it seem so real when you're reading it. You include the little things that happen and the people. And every part of your journeys that you have written about includes people who are very, you feel like you almost know them from your description of them.
Well, I'm glad you caught that because to me, I think that becomes much more meaningful. And every day when I'm walking, no matter how late it is, I'll sit up by the candlelight oftentimes and sit and write in my journal and jot down all the people I ran into and the meaningful things that happened and the thoughts that crossed my mind and the little miracles that happened along the way that make it more than just a walk.
Mm-hmm. You know, and that's another good point. You're giving us so many good points here. I really encourage everyone to keep a journal. You know, you think you'll always remember, and sometimes you take pictures, and that will help you trigger your memory, but even in a picture sometimes you don't remember the name of the person, and a picture can't necessarily capture those little miracles that happen either. So carrying a journal and writing on it, whether it's early in the morning or at night, is also really helpful, and I think that is kind of what I capture. when you write is that you are there, and I feel like I'm there with you in the moment. And what was the next next trek after Tibet?
Well, the next book I wrote was called Dead Men Don't Leave Tips, and it was kind of a ship of fools journey, very different that we took. Cheryl, my wife, and I took from London to Cape Town, and it was a 7-month journey across Africa. It was an African transect, and we read about Africa, and we traveled independently with backpacks through probably 50 countries at that point. But this seemed oh so daunting, and what were we getting ourselves into? And you hear all sorts of horror stories about travel in Africa and things that can go wrong. And we thought, well, okay, maybe we'll play it on the safe side this time, and we'll book a trip on one of these overland trips, which is basic. It's a do-it-yourself safari, is what it is. And you have a driver and you have a guide, and basically you're the guys who are setting up the tents, you're unloading the truck, you're getting the water, you're going shopping in the marketplace, you're cutting the firewood. Everything is do-it-yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It started out with the best of intentions, and we soon figured out that our driver and our guide had never been to Africa before, never been to this part of Africa before. One of them was half blind and had no depth perception. So by the time we reached the Sahara Desert, I think we landed in every bit of soft pissed out in the middle of the desert. And it was somewhere around the 12th or 15th time we all unloaded, got out of the truck, put down the sand mats, started shoveling. I said, something's just not right. Something's not right here. I think we'd be better off on our own. And that was quickly proven, because we ended up in a little town called Taman Rasset, out in the middle of Tuareg country, and the truck gearbox had broken because of all the grinding of the gears that had been going on trying to get out of the sand. And so we were stuck in the middle of the desert for about 2 weeks waiting for a part.
Wow.
And the part never came. The part never came. We sat there, and they never followed up to make sure that the part had even been sent. And finally, after about 2 weeks, I said, look, we want to make it out of here alive, and I think our chances are probably better on our own. So if you just give us our money back, we'd be happy to leave, and you can sell it to somebody else. Well, unfortunately, that was a little problem, because they said, well, if you stick it out until Nairobi, then we'll give you the second half back. I mean, this is a huge, huge trip. This is 17,000 miles or so. And we said, okay. So we stuck it out, and we got to experience a lot of things. We went dancing with the pygmies in the middle of the desert. We, of course, crossed the Sahara Desert. We went on the black market to deal and trade in some pretty shady places. And then We finally set off on our own in Nairobi, and Cheryl and I had a great time. We took anything that moved, traveled strictly like a local, stayed in local places. We caught the gun run across Mozambique in the middle of the Civil War. We went whitewater rafting down the Zambezi River. We climbed Kilimanjaro. We stalked mountain gorillas, photo-stalked mountain gorillas in what was then Zaire, and ended up down in Cape Town in Soweto just as Nelson Mandela was released.
That's amazing. And I guess the title of the book is now understood better, Dead Man Indeed Don't Leave Trips. I think you said at one point that to your rather deficient guides on this trip.
Yeah. Don't kill me, because you'll never get a tip out of this.
And you know what? This could happen to someone, but you didn't give up, and you just decided to do what you needed to do, and it seemed like it turned the whole thing around at that point, which is just wonderful.
It did, and if anything, it's taught us a little bit of tenacity, a lot of humility, because we were definitely green at this and depended on the kindness of strangers a lot of times. But having a sense of humor is ultimately the best thing you can pack in your backpack,
wow.
I think.
So many great tips you're giving us, you know, the perseverance here and the sense of humor. I love that. And the perseverance does further. It's just, okay, so we're into the second book. Now you have two other books you've written, each of them with great stories. And by the way, anyone can go to your website or on Amazon and get these books. Is that correct?
Yes, or on Amazon, you can order them locally. You can go to barnesandnoble.com or your favorite bookstore.
And what's your website, Brandon?
It's pilgrimstales.com.
And you're on Facebook, too, as Brandon Wilson, right?
Brandon Wilson, author and explorer.
Yes, you are indeed.
And so people can friend me there. And I do pretty frequent posts a couple times a week. I don't inundate people too much, but they can kind of keep up on a lot of travels and upcoming travels and past travels and little stories and particularly a lot of photos I post.
Yeah, absolutely. I really highly recommend it. I love your photos. You are really, you could do National Geographic, you know. You could be, you know, you have the kind of psyche for actually a National Geographic person, because I've had a chance to interview some wonderful people who have worked with National Geographic, like Flip Wilson and Flip, some others that have done work with them. But let's go on to your third book. I think there's an interesting story here. Is this the one where you did the full Santiago de Compostela?
Well, actually, Cindy, this third book is called Along the Templar Trail,
mm-hmm.
and it is about recreating the route of the first Crusades from France to Jerusalem. But let me tell you how we got into that. Back in 1999, I had read about this ancient, it was a pilgrimage trail across Spain, which was the Camino de Santiago. And I ended up walking that, and it was such a life-changing experience for me. You know, in preparation, I was working out every day, I was lifting weights, I was jogging, I was doing incline work, and I thought I was in the best condition of my life. And after taking the plane from to Santiago and taking the plane to Spain and traveling for 2.5 days, you know what it's like coming from Hawaii.
Yeah.
I was so bushed, but I didn't take any time off. I just started hiking. Well, I had a pair of Air Jordans at that point, which promptly deflated on the first shale that I ran into. So after 2 days in the air and walking 30 Ks, 8 hours, I got in and my feet were totally blistered.
Wow.
Totally. I had eight blisters. There was no way I could step without excruciating.
That's terrible. That's terrible.
Which is so
and you know how to pack and everything. Did you bring any molds? I guess that's too much for molds to handle, right?
Yeah, I discovered compeats, which are even better than molds. But the thing was, you know, it caused me to slow down. And by slowing down, I got so much more out of the first week. I noticed every blade of grass and every sound and every smell from fields of thyme, and really got to fully experience what in a medieval age pilgrim would have felt.
It's not the journey; it's the actual experiencing the moment. It's not getting to your goal, but it's living that life along the way. And you know, it's so funny. I walk small walks every day, and I like to do that. I like to actually walk and take everything in. And I have a friend who walks, and all they want to do is walk quickly. And I just lose so much. I don't take the pictures. I don't notice the little things. And I could certainly see if you had a goal in mind, where trying to get from point A to point B quickly, well, you would lose a lot along the way.
Yes, it is the journey. You know, it's the day-to-day journey, and it becomes almost a walking meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And it became so much more for me. It really opened up a whole different area of travel for me, and it again reminded me of a lot of the experiences that we had had when we were in Tibet.
Mm.
So over the next few years, I went about exploring different. Every year I would come back to Europe and I would do a different pilgrimage trail. One year I did a trek on the Via Francigena from Switzerland to Rome. And the next year, then I came back and did Switzerland to Canterbury, England.
Wow.
And then another year, I did the St. Olaf's Trail in Norway, which is, each of these are about a month's walking, and you're walking 20 to 30 Ks a day.
Wow.
And then after that, I went and did the Via de la Plata, which is from Sevilla in southern Spain up to Santiago in northern Spain. Then another year, Cheryl and I went and did the Via Francigena again, the Camino de Santiago again, rather. And then we went the Camino Catalan, Camino Aragonese, which is in eastern Spain. So each of those years we did one of those. And then, you know, it's, you reach a point where you said, okay, I've gone to Rome and I've gone to Santiago de Compostela, to the holy sites, most holy sites of Christendom. And what about Jerusalem? And it occurred to me that there really wasn't any sort of set path like these paths for a pilgrim wanting to go to Jerusalem. So out of the blue, one day I was contacted by one of the Frenchmen I met on the original Camino that I'd walked, 7 years before. And he said, my wife was going to walk with me, but she doesn't want to walk to Jerusalem. Would you like to go? And it took me all of about 20 seconds to say, oh, yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. And so we ended up, we set off in April of 2006, and our path was along the route of the First Crusades. And I thought, what a wonderful irony to take this path of war and to transform it into a path of peace. And so we set out, and I kept notes every day, and I plotted the stages, and we met a lot of people. And especially going through Muslim countries, you're sort of wondering what's the reaction going to be to people, especially Americans walking through Muslim countries. And such generosity was shown to us, such kindness was shown to us. My friend stayed with me. He stayed with me until Istanbul, and he's a diabetic, and he was having problems because of the heat and everything. So at that point, I continued alone from Istanbul. And war had broken out in the Middle East, and there was bombing going on in Tel Aviv, and they were evacuating people from Lebanon and into Cyprus. So at that point, I had to change the routing a little bit and decided, instead of going through Syria and Jordan as I originally had, I went to the southern coast of Turkey, then hopped over to Cyprus, walked across Cyprus, and then took a cargo ship from Cyprus to Haifa, and then continued from Haifa to Jerusalem.
Wow.
On the Israel National Trail. Now, this took 6 months of walking every day. I think we took 4 days off in 6 months.
Is that one of your longest treks?
That's definitely the longest trek. And each of these stages is plotted out, and since then, I've gone on to call the trail the Templar Trail, because the Templars were some of the ones who had originally taken care and provided protection for the pilgrims.
And it was, again, a life-changing experience, but 6 months, when you're in it that way, don't you just sometimes want to stop and just say, okay, enough already? I mean, really, it's got to be, day after day after day of continuing on, it's got to be a little tiring.
Well, it was tiring in one sense, but in another sense, it was inspiring, because every day is an uncertainty. You don't know where you're going to end up. You don't know the people you're going to meet along the way, the experiences. And believe me, it's like every day there was something new and something different. And it was reaffirming to me the kindness of people, and the traditions of hospitality that exist and are still practiced in the Middle East, and how tired people are of war, generally, and how many Muslims consider this one big family between the Muslims and the Christians.
Wow.
Today.
Really?
They say, we're all part of the tree of Abraham, and it's true. Mm. We have many of the same prophets many of the same figures in our religious history, in all three religions, if you can include Judaism.
Well, you know, so you have learned so much, and it sounds like that in a way, this all of these different fantastic adventures you've experienced have been a journey also in learning, and a journey inside yourself as well as a journey outside, because it seems like, and I always think that travel changes you, but you must have really been hungry for a lot of learning.
Well, this trip especially changed me immensely, and coming back to Maui, and I was surprised and honored. This book actually won the best travel book from the Society of American Travel Journalists.
How wonderful. That's great. So you did also, in the midst of this, some trips back and forth in where you lived, of course. You were living first on Maui, then to the Big Island. Then you went to the Dolomites and lived there for a while, right?
Yes, from Maui, actually, it was another trail I heard about that had just been put together, and it was called the Via Alpina, and it crosses the backbone of the Alps. It starts in Trieste, Italy, and it ends up in Monte Carlo, but in between, there are eight countries, and every day, you climb another mountain. You sleep in a hut at the top of the mountain, and then the next day, go down about 1,000 feet. The next day, come up about 1,000 feet.
Wow.
And it was... God, it was the perfect way to experience alpine life and to see the changes that happened because of resort industry, because of climate change and global warming, the disappearing of the glaciers, a transition from rural life where people, you know, a generation ago were farmers and dairy farmers and now are working in cafes and discos.
Wow.
I wrote a book about that.
What was that one called, that book?
That was Over the Top and Back Again.
Mm-hmm. And at this point now, you're starting to get a little bit older, and you've done a lot of journeys and put a lot of wear and tear on your body. How's at this point, you know, are you thinking, gosh, I wonder if I'm going to be able to do some of the treks that I've done before?
Well, it's funny, I don't plan ahead too much in these, but after we came back, we didn't come back to Hawaii at that point. We went and lived in the Dolomites. We spent 4 years in Italy, and I wrote the book, and that won some more awards. And after that, we came back to the Big Island and lived in Volcano for a couple of years. And while living there, I would make annual trips and went back to Sweden and Norway and walked the St. Olaf's Way again this time. And that was totally a different adventure and a pathway that is dates back 1,000 years.
Yeah.
And had just reopened again, and I finished that and had a really nice surprise before I left Sweden. I was inducted into the Knights Hospitaller and Knights of Malta.
Wow.
So that was a very memorable experience. But again, I think my work on these trails contributed to my consideration for this honor.
I absolutely agree. Now, the thing is, now you went back to the Big Island. You were there were you there when the whole volcano was going off and all of that stuff was going on?
Of course, the volcano's been going off for, 20
years? Yes.
But no, we left last spring, so it was actually just before all this stuff started happening again, and the earthquakes that they've been suffering through there. Gosh, that was terrible, and my heart goes out to those people, but at least it looks like the worst is past.
Yes. Yeah, indeed. So what made you want to move back to France?
We've always considered France sort of a second home, and it's been a place we've oftentimes come away to. I wrote my first book there when we were living in Nice. I wrote Yak Butter Blues while we were there, and I think it was Thomas Jefferson who once said that Americans have two homes. The first is America, but the second is certainly in France.
I can relate. I would love to live in France, but and again, you're living in a different place in France than a lot of people would find or think of living. What drew you to your particular area that you're living in now?
We're in the mountains, and it's a very cosmopolitan area. It's a resort, but it's a very active, young area. We're an hour from Switzerland. We're half an hour from Italy.
Nice.
And so it's got a nice central location as a place to get away, and we love it here. It's beautiful, and the culture and the people, and we're taking language classes and trying to assimilate.
I was going to ask you that. Do you speak French? That was a very important next question.
Yeah, I've been studying. I studied in school, and then we've been studying every day for a year and a half on the internet. So it's getting much better.
That's wonderful. Okay, so this last trip, which you've been doing these amazing posts on, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful pictures on Facebook. Tell us about what inspired this last two-week journey.
Well, at this point in my life, and you mentioned my age, I just turned 65. Mm-hmm. And I decided I was going to challenge myself and do the Tour de Mont Blanc. And the Tour de Mont Blanc is about 200 Ks, about 11 days, high altitude hiking from hut to hut again. You climb about 1,000 meters and descend about 1,000 meters every day. So it really puts you through your paces. And even though you think you may be in great shape when it starts out, the mountain quickly shows you who's in charge. But it was a great experience, and again, something that, you know, you can't miss doing the Tour de Mont Blanc. It's they actually had a marathon that I found myself in the midst of, the Ultra Tour de Mont Blanc, and that's a humbling experience when all of a sudden 200 runners are running past you up the side of a mountain on a very narrow trail. That's only wide enough for one person to go at a time. And these guys actually, it's kind of like doing the Ironman in the mountains.
How high, what's the altitude that you were at?
Well, let's see. It's about, I'm at about 4,000 feet right now. I'm trying to put everything into feet. Mont Blanc is the highest mountain. It's about 16,000 feet.
My gosh.
So, yeah, people are probably anywhere from, 12,000 feet or so.
So you are really having to acclimate, and you get it. Your whole blood thins at that level, doesn't it? And you have to really, for breathing, many people have issues, of course, breathing at that kind of altitude.
Yeah, it's challenging doing. Let's see, the elevation on Mont Blanc itself is 4,800 meters.
Wow.
And 4,800 meters.
And then cold is probably as well. I mean, there's the issue of how cold it is, right?
Yeah, Mont Blanc itself is 15,700 feet.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So. It's up there, so you're dealing with that, and it was getting cold at night, and dealing with, you know, carrying food, a little bit of food with you, but then, you know, the hut is there at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
But again, your recovery time, you're going again and doing it day after day after day, so it's like a long distance marathon, even for me, mm-hmm. taking 11 days to do it. To give you an idea, these guys are so fit and so Jake. The winning run was 17 hours.
Oh, my God.
That's 17 hours.
I can't even.
200 Ks.
Oh, my gosh. I can't even conceive of that. I really, that is like beyond even being able to understand that. That's unbelievable. And it's funny. We don't hear a lot about that here in America, you know. But, I mean, and I'm surprised that wasn't all over the news and things. That's pretty amazing to me.
Oh, yeah. It's one of a kind experience. But to be out there and share that, you know, it's funny. And there was one Italian runner who came up by me, and he pushed his name card in front of me, his race number, uh-huh. and indicated, you want to run this? You want to take my place? I'm ready to quit.
Now, I have to ask you, because you do these amazing treks. Obviously, you took some great pictures. So how do you decide when you want to stop and do this? I mean, is there something that you just see along the way, say, I've got to stop and take a picture? Is that motivating you? Or, I mean, because you do take the time to get great photographs.
Well, surprisingly enough, I shoot most of this stuff on the fly. I don't sit down and wait for an hour for the light to be perfect. And, you know, sometimes it hits and sometimes it doesn't. But I've kind of got a sense about this. And the most important thing is to keep the camera handy. I used to carry around a lot more camera gear than I do now. Mm. I had a big old Nikon steel body with four or five different lenses. But now on a trip like this, I'm packing so light. I'm only carrying about 15 pounds. So I want my camera gear to be light as well. And I guess I'm lucky with the shots I get.
What kind of camera do you use now?
I have an Olympus, just a small Olympus.
Because, I mean, it's good to know. I use my iPhone. But as much as I love my iPhone for the convenience, there is something about taking a picture with a, I hate to say, real camera, but really a real camera, right?
And yeah, but this camera, even the technology today with digital cameras, this camera is the size of a pack of cigarettes.
Seriously, what model is it? Because maybe I'll get one.
I'll talk to you later.
Okay. I mean, that sounds really exciting on that. So, okay, and I have to ask you about your shoes. You mentioned your Nike issue, which is kind of deflating. Deflating in itself is to know that you have these expensive shoes, because you have to watch your budget on these trips. I mean, it gets really expensive doing these trips. And your work is your writing and your pictures. You're not getting any other income in. But so what did you decide, and what have you found is the best shoes for you when you travel and trek?
Well, I got some shoes from Montrail for the trip to Jerusalem, and I went through four or five pairs of Montrails, which were just very breathable tennis shoe type shoes.
Hmm.
And for the hiking in the mountains like I'm doing now, I've got Scarpas that I use for the Dolomites. That was another trip I did through the Dolomites, a two-week trip. That was 3 years ago. And on this latest one, I mostly use Merrells.
I like Merrells. Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's interesting, too, because so you haven't just stuck with one particular brand. You just kind of find out what's right for you. And you know what's interesting, too? Some of the shoe companies have actually switched ownership, and that can happen, too. You can think you found the right shoe, and all of a sudden someone buys the company out and it changes, right?
Oh, I know. Yeah, that's what happened to Montrail. They were bought out by Columbia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then they change. So,
yeah, but yeah, and GoLite was another equipment sponsor, and they're out of business now. So
wow,
the industry changes a lot, and for me, it depends on what type of surface I think I'm going to be walking on. Mm-hmm. Whether it's high alpine where you need a lot of support and you have a heavier pack, or you're walking on dirt roads and it's relatively flat and it's hot weather, then you want something that's breathable and mm-hmm. it's going to shed perspiration and it's going to be light on your feet.
So obviously how you pack is really, really important when you're doing something, especially these long treks. You've learned through all of these various treks that you obviously have to pack light. Do you have any keys? Do you just pack some basics and then buy stuff along the way?
No, I have it down to pretty much a formula, and don't need to pick up too much of anything along the way. Just snacks if I want a snack. But otherwise, I've got it down to, like I said, about 15 pounds, and I've got a packing list in all of my books. I always put that in because everybody always asks me, how do I pack? What do I pack? How do you prepare for weather like this? And it's a science, and everybody has their own formula, but this is something I've developed over the last 20 years that works pretty well for me.
Well, you know, I find your life to be, I mean, I kind of, part of me would love to be doing what you're doing. I don't think I could ever really accomplish what you're doing as far as the walking ability. But I'm a voyeur of sorts, and so that's why I love to read your books and to talk to you and see you on Facebook, because it continually amazes me that you have this ability to just go for it and not to get stopped. And not only that, looking at each trip with these great innocent eyes of a traveler that is seeing it kind of with that beginner's mind for the first time.
Well, thanks, India. I'm glad you get that out of it. It's something that inspires me, and I enjoy it. It's my passion, and I think that's important, you know, finding something that is your passion. And I don't live an exceptionally extravagant lifestyle, but it's comfortable, and this is the kind of, you know, it's a kind of getaway that helps to put everything back in focus. It sheds light on what's important in life. It's a portal in a lot of ways to understanding. And I always come back a slightly changed person from when I left. And it keeps you young. You know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, I think.
Well, you know, you have not stopped. And I know once or twice I've talked to you and think, oh, I don't know if I'm going to do another trip. This last trip was. And then that spirit takes you over and you're back at it again. Do you know what you're going to be doing next?
I have no idea at this point. I've got a couple thoughts. There's a new pilgrimage trail that they have created across. It runs the length of Ireland.
Wow.
North to south. So that might be interesting next year or the next couple of years. We'll see.
I love Ireland. In fact, I'm planning to go there again in June. It would be interesting to see that. I think people would love to hear about that adventure. I think that's great. That sounds wonderful. Well, you know what? It's always fun to connect with you and talk to you. And like I say, I love following you. Can you give people your Facebook site again?
Yeah, the Facebook site is Brandon Wilson, author and explorer.
And website?
The website is Pilgrim's Tales, PilgrimsTales.com. And there are samples from the books. There are short stories I've written in there. I've done a lot of... besides the four books, I've also contributed to, oh gosh, six or seven different anthologies now. And we just had one that came out last year that deals specifically with pilgrimage.
You know what? That's such a great thing for people to understand. I think everyone should think about taking every trip as if it's a pilgrimage. And if you do that, you'll be amazed at what happens. Every trip is an opportunity to change and to learn and to grow and to meet new friends, you know. And so I think that would be a valuable thing for people to pick up. And that are all of these on Amazon?
Yes, they are. Uh-huh. Yeah, they're all on Amazon. The latest pilgrimage book is called The Pilgrimage Chronicles, Embracing the Quest. And it's a compilation of about 35 different stories and authors. And I wrote the opening story called The Metamorphosis of a Pilgrim and wrote the book's introduction.
I love that. I love that. I have to get that one. I've read the other four books. I haven't got that one yet, so I'll have to get that.
Oh, yeah, this is a massive, it's like 450 pages.
Whoa!
And it's a second book which follows up on the one that came out the year before called The Walkabout Chronicles, Epic Journeys by Foot. And there are everybody from Wade Davis to Tim Cahill, I think, is in there, and Reinhold Messner is in there, and just a lot of top travel writers that you've heard of all contributed a story, and it's all about their epic journeys around the world.
I love it. I love it. Well, you're a treat to talk to, and I am always feeling blessed to know you. And it's so great to connect, Brandon. I just love your stories. You always inspire me. So thank you so much for taking the time to chat today and to share your stories. And, you know, next time I'm in France, I'll look you up. Or maybe then you'll already be trekking across Ireland. I don't know.
Who knows? The road has a way of bringing people together.
It does. Okay, well, God bless your journeys and have a great trip the next trip. And thank you for doing all the things that you do that we learn so much from.
Thank you, Cindy, and big aloha to all my friends on the Big Island in Maui.
All right. Well, take care of yourself, and a big aloha to you.
Okay, thank you.
Bye.